Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast through a Google Plus Hangout.
What's up, dads? It's Andy.
Hey, and this is Kurt.
So if you listen to us regularly, you'll probably notice that there is that the audio quality is kind of a step down on this episode compared to our typical episodes. I'm currently in Houston. I didn't feel like packing up the studio and bringing all of my equipment here, so I'm just ripping the audio from our live broadcast. Although it's a step down, I'm pretty confident that it's still listenable. The audio is listenable. Whether or not we are listenable or our content is listenable, that's up for debate, and that's for you to decide, I guess. So that explains why this one might sound different. If you're in Oklahoma or the surrounding areas, I will be in Tulsa for the IVNV/Cubs Fans in Oklahoma Game Watch. It is at Savastano's Pizza in Tulsa. I'm kind of looking forward to having Chicago style pizza in Oklahoma.
I bet it's okay.
It's actually thin crust.
Right. Yeah, I looked it up online. It looks pretty good. But yeah, there's, if you're not sure whether or not you want to go, there's 30 people that have RSVP'd, to go to that thing. So, a pretty big group. And I actually brought some IVMV stuff to give away there. We'll have to come up with some sort of contest or something. Maybe whoever comes closest to guessing the final score. But that is Friday night, this upcoming Friday night, the Cubs-Cardinals game. So that should be fun. So on this episode, we're going to talk about Starlin Castro, his shenanigans and heroics. We're going to comment on this series with the Twins, and then we'll go through listener questions. Kurt's going to give his scary stat of the week, and we'll read some internet muscle flexes. So, Andy, why don't you get us started with Starlin? Oh, wait, sure. A minute. Before we do that, though, what are you guys drinking?
Oh, we're doing that.
I know. I'm drinking tonight, so I wanted to do it.
I have a Sierra Nevada Hop Hunter IPA. It's delicious.
Is it good? I don't think I've had that.
Very, very good. It's made with distilled hop oil, whatever that means.
Ooh, delicious hop oil. We had an article sent to us by a friend this week about how drinking hop-heavy beers actually helps men grow breasts because...
Or just beer in general.
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Like increases estrogen levels or something like that.
Oh, come on.
My thought is that's kind of like the worst news ever. But yeah, like you said, something we already knew, I guess. I'm having a 60-minute IPA by Dogfish Head, and it is good.
That is a good one.
I'm drinking, since I am in Texas, I went and got a mixer sixer down here and tried some other stuff. This is a St. Arnold. Have you guys heard of St. Arnold? Alyssa. It's an IPA.
No, that's...
It's really good. And on deck, I've got a Carbach Hopadillo. And I drank one of these last night, and it is really good.
Boy, look at Corey drinking the hop breast beers. Corey's not much of a hop head.
But I know, but
apparently now he is.
Oh, I've been trying to get into it for the last, 4 or 5 months, maybe.
You're trying to grow your breasts.
Right. But both of these are really good, and I had another local, I think these are both Houston breweries, I'm not sure. Yeah, both of them are in Houston. And I tried another local IPA last night. Now, I wasn't too keen on that one, but I don't remember what it was called. So, but I will be here for another week. So if you know of good beers in Texas, we went out to eat last night and I had a Shiner Bock because I was like, I'm in Texas. I should drink a Shiner.
It's the only place you can get it.
Kind of pedestrian, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I figured I'd try it. So, but if anybody knows any good Texas beers down here, I'd like to, you know, give me a heads up. So anyways, back to Starling Castro, Andy.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up that on Friday, Castro made a pretty egregious mistake as he made a fielding error, kind of bounced off the, he was trying to field a grounder to his left a little bit and it bounced off the heel of his glove and through his legs. And so that allowed a run to score. But then he proceeded to kind of like stare at the left field wall in disgust after that happened. And so, Rosario then for the Twins also scored as he wasn't paying attention. So it was a pretty horrible error. And of course, you know, that gets all the Castro hate riled up and stirred up.
Right.
And I just kind of wanted to talk about that with you guys a little bit because we've talked in the past about how, oh, you know, stuff like that is probably going to get better. He's probably, you know, I mean, as his career goes on, he's going to be able to maintain focus a little bit better. But my thoughts on that is I think he just kind of is the player that he is and the player that he's going to be. I think we're going to continue to see every once in a while lack of focus type things like that happen. But I also think that we'll continue to see moments in yesterday's game where he got the hit to put the Cubs ahead 3-1 in the 10th inning a lot. You know, I think that just like a few of these like gaffes and lack of focus type of incidents, I don't think detract from the overall, I mean, they do detract from his overall benefit a little bit, but I think that the player that he is overall outweighs those, you know, I think we can kind of forgive those few mistakes that he's going to make going forward too because of what he does bring to the team.
Yeah. As far as this specific situation, I missed Friday's game. I haven't been able to actually watch any games since our last episode because we were on the road and everything. MLB at bat app, even the audio stream does not work well in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas. Just a heads up in case you're cruising through there hoping you can stream the Cubs game.
That's why all those guys have to play banjos on their front porch because
they can't get MLB at bat to stream.
So time to play some banjo.
I did see a short clip of what happened. I guess, you know, when stuff like that happens with Castro, it's kind of hard to defend him. I mean, mm-hmm. It doesn't really change my overall opinion of him other than it just being frustrating that it gives people ammunition. It gives fans that don't like him ammunition. It gives broadcasters and national media that ammunition. You know, I really hate that one of the go-to storylines on ESPN or Fox broadcasts of Cubs games is Starlin Castro and the fact that he doesn't pay attention and he makes stupid and avoidable mistakes.
Well, what about this? In his last seven games, he's hit .357.
Right, but they don't pay attention to that. I mean, that's not. I mean, do you hear?
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. Like, I focus on that stuff more than I do the brain farts and the mistakes that he makes and everything like that. These things frustrate me because it's like easy pickings for the Starlin haters and for the national media. And I think if we didn't see those types of things for a couple of years, and if it was just purely like throwing errors and some fielding errors, I mean, everything is going to be just hyper-analyzed when it comes to him, I think, defensively. But it's really frustrating when he gives them this. You know, I mean, like, this is kind of on the same level as him having his back to the batter a couple years ago on, I think it was an ESPN broadcast. And it's like, I don't know, that stuff just, it's frustrating. I get tired of it, you know, and it's not, sure. It doesn't change greatly how I see Castro. It just really irritates me that it just adds fuel to the fire.
Yeah, he's on pace, I think, this season to get close or even surpass his 2011 high water mark for errors at 29. He has 14 now, and he had 15 last season. But, I mean, he's shown, you know, last season he showed pretty good focus overall as he, you know, set his PR for the lowest number of errors he's committed in a season. So, I mean, we'll see that Castro again, I'm sure, but there still will be those occasional lack of focus mistakes.
And the thing, too, is I think that this kind of stuff – I hate to say that it happens to all ball players, but this kind of stuff kind of does happen in baseball. This isn't like a totally uncommon experience. I mean, how many times have we seen outfielders toss the ball into the stands after the second out? You know, that kind of stuff happens, but because it's Starlin Castro and because it's happened before, it's just, you know, for instance, look at last season. Do you remember that game where Anthony Rizzo caught a foul ball and fell into the dugout or fell over the stands or something, and that allowed the runner from third to score?
Oh, yeah.
Like if that was Castro, people would have been saying, like, he should have known what's going on. He should, like, that's a Castro brain fart right there. But because it happened to Anthony Rizzo, it was, look how hard he tried, and, oh, man, guy just, you know, can't get a break on that one, you know.
Sure, yeah.
But like I said, these things like Castro did on Friday makes it really hard to defend him, especially defensively, you know, to say like, well, he's not that bad, or, you know, his focus isn't that bad. When something like that happens, it's like, okay, yep, it is. But I mean, find that the things that we value in Castro, like, those still are – higher priority for me than these things. Go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I was just going to say, and it's tough too, because we just spent the last few episodes kind of defending him and saying, like, yeah, these things are going to happen. And none of these, he hadn't had a huge gaffe like this in a while. And then this happens, and it is hard because it's indefensible, like you said, Corey, but he's still really good offensively. And we haven't really got to the point that then he kind of redeems himself. Oh no, Andy did mention, yeah, then he redeems himself with the run scoring hits. And, you know, he's had what, like, 3 go ahead / walk off hits this year. And so,
right.
Yeah, I hate that
clutch hitting.
I hate the fact that there has to be a narrative though where it's like, oh, he's fallen from grace with that play. Oh, he redeemed himself. Look how he climbed up from the depths. How about, you know, just kind of like a day in the life of Starlin Castro as a baseball player?
Yeah.
It's not, I don't know.
But that is, I mean, everything has to have a narrative these days. I mean,
right.
That's just how anything, because the Cubs are kind of good this year, so they get more attention. And so, of course, they're gonna be more under the microscope for this kind of thing. And
well, I think,
especially him.
Well, yeah, especially too, because there are players that could take his place.
Mm-hmm.
But these things, and I'm afraid that maybe some Castro haters, I'm talking about Starlin, not Fidel, are probably like joyous about this situation. You know what I mean? Like, oh, see, I was right. He's a buffoon. Look at him out there. He's an idiot. What a schmuck. You know? And it's like, okay, you can think that, but if your goal is for the Cubs to trade away Starlin Castro for pitching or whatever, and for Addison Russell or Javier Baez or somebody else to take over, which with each one of these things, Starlin Castro's trade value goes down. So you probably shouldn't delight in these things. They should probably frustrate you because he's making himself less valuable.
Right.
Not that I think individual plays like that probably have a huge impact on a player's value, trade value, or anything like that. But still, like you said, it's that narrative. We don't need the narrative. We don't need Starlin Castro to be known as the ADHD shortstop.
I think it's kind of too late. He kind of already is. I mean, he is that guy. But it's whether you're willing to accept it or not, I think, is really the question for his offensive.
Like, the benefits outweigh the downfalls, the weaknesses.
I'm sort of the point where expecting it to stop seems a little naive, but accepting it, and like you just said, like, you know, accepting the benefits will eventually outweigh this sort of negative.
That's kind of the point I was trying to make or originally, and you said it better than me, is just it's time for people to kind of accept that this is sort of like the player that he is.
Yeah. And I do think it's okay to like say, okay, maybe we could get some value for him. Like, I'm okay with that argument or that sense a Cubs fan saying, like, hey, maybe you trade him away, you strengthen your pitching. But I think where we're together on this is that the sort of just vitriol and hatred for him is just seems way out of line. So I think, yeah, I'm on the boat of like, yeah, if you can get return on him and it makes sense for the team and, you know, Russell slides over, I'm okay with that, but I'm not okay with just, random hatred of him. Well, not random, but just pure hatred of Castro.
Yeah,
it's nasty. But
It does.
But it's tiresome. It's just like,
yeah. I don't know. I'm still like in the camp that like I don't want to see him really traded away right now, because I still think that, yeah, Addison Russell, 21-year-old, is, you know, showing a lot of promise, is exciting and everything, still not proven at the major league level. And we have a shortstop that is proven at the major league level. He proves a lot of things at the major league level, but I still hate the idea of ditching him when I think that whatever weakness the Cubs have that you feel like they need to improve, mainly pitching, starting pitching and relief pitching, I think the Cubs can improve those things and strengthen those areas of their ball club without trading Starlin Castro. I don't think you have to trade him. Yeah. I don't think you have to trade him to get everybody on the field, and I don't think you have to trade him because he's the only way that you're going to fill those needs.
Yeah, I guess I'm on board with that at this point, but I hope Castro does realize that argument won't last too long, because I think that Russell, he isn't there yet, but I'm fairly confident that he will be, and when he gets to that point, this front office, I don't think it is not one to say, well, because you have tenure here, that's enough. And they're willing to pull the trigger on the deal that makes the most sense for the team. So, like, while I agree with you now, I don't think that we have a whole lot of time left for that argument to where it's going to be, you can't say that Russell needs to be there.
But I think
he needs to stop this kind of stuff.
But I think if you looked at the Cubs lineup right now, and if you looked at the players that you would maybe want to have be part of this team this year, I still think there's room for everybody. You know, let's say Javier Baez comes back from his injury, he's ready to go, and you need to get him in the lineup. Then you slide him into third base, and you slide Bryant to left field. You know, until like Kyle Schwarber comes into the equation as an outfielder, I still think there's a spot for everybody on this team. It's not like there's nowhere for Javier Baez to play if he's tearing it up when he's, you know, done rehabbing and everything. So I still don't feel that like urgency, you know.
But then the other side of it is like they are sort of, I mean, the Central's really tough, as we know this year, but they are contending. Their record's there. They're in the wild card hunt. And if this team, or if this front office thinks they're going to win this year, and they want to improve at the trade deadline, you know, he does sort of rise to the top as somebody that might make sense, but we'll see.
Yeah. I can't believe how much time we've spent on Castro in the last month.
Like I said, we
stop doing stupid stuff, Starlin.
Episode, and then he does that. It's just
right. Oh. All right, well, let's move on to something else. Before we talk about this Twins series, we recorded our midweek episode during that 17-0 manhandling of the Indians. That's the Cubs' offensive production that we've been waiting for. Like we have been saying since Bryant and Russell got called up, we've been talking about waiting for that game. That, you know, where the offense is capable of just crushing teams, and we finally saw what we knew they're capable of. And honestly, I think today could kind of fall into that category too. I think we're going to see more of these this season. I don't think this is like a rare occurrence. I think we could see a handful of these between the end of the season.
The 17-0 game is an anomaly, but like more 8-0 or 8-1, 8-2.
Yeah, it's kind of great. I was like, I suppose 8-0 might qualify.
No, I mean, that's a drubbing too. I mean, 17-0 is like it's raising a building to the ground and then turning it into a pasture again. I don't know.
But
yeah. the Indians used two position player pitchers
right.
At that point. Runs are
meaningless. Yeah, there should be an asterisk next to Chris Bryant's first grand slam of his career, I believe.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah,
man, it was so awesome to see that, you know, anybody that's been listening to us for a while knows we've been saying like this team is going to absolutely crush some teams. And it was weird that it hadn't happened yet. And it was like, okay, it's just bound to happen. When is it going to happen? And then while we were recording that episode, it was just
utter destruction.
Right. And now you've got another one just a few days later. So, I mean, this is, A lot of fun. I don't know.
We just know how much firepower is in this lineup potentially. And so, yeah, it's nice to see it all kind of come together. Like if all these guys are locked in at the plate for the same game, like during the same game, that is trouble for the other team.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Especially when they've got Schwarber there, which they won't anymore. But
was that a WADA start? I'm trying to remember.
The 17-0?
Like seven innings or something?
I think
Yeah, it was. He went like seven.
It's really good to have those for your number five starter too. Or, you know, the back of the rotation, whether it's four or five. It's kind of nice to get that kind of production when Jeff Samardzija could have won games with that production.
Well, I mean, yeah, anybody. I could win a game with that production. Well, let's not get too carried away.
Right. I mean, after all, the Cleveland Indians couldn't.
Let me tell you, I just feel pretty powerful today on Father's Day, you guys. So I get a little carried away.
So any comments you guys have on this weekend series that the Cubs just wrapped up with the Twins?
Well, I wanted to say, too, that Anthony Rizzo kind of fell on a little bit of a rough stretch there, and seems like he's getting back his mojo. As in just the three Minnesota games, he hit three homers and drove in four runs and had six hits total. That's good to see.
Yeah. It was good to see Arrieta back to dominance today.
Yeah, Corey and I were just kind of talking about that before the recording, and I feel like the first time he had a game like that last season, he went on a run of games like that, you know, where it seems like once he gets one of these type of starts under his belt that, you know, maybe we can expect to see a few more here in quick succession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had those, like, flirting with perfect games or no-hitters last year. So if we can string... I'll take, four-hit complete games, shutouts, but whatever he decides to do.
Yeah, that was exciting. I honestly don't. I mean, my knowledge of this series with the Twins is really limited to like reading the articles that everyone else has read because I was not able to watch any of it at all. I thought I'd be able to watch today's game, but for Father's Day we went to a pool, so I sat at a pool.
Well, let me give you this: the Cubs have six players hitting 300 or higher in the last seven games. That includes two small sample sizes. I can say that with confidence because I know Corey doesn't have that file queued up. David Ross and Mike Baxter are the small sample sizes, but Castro, Rizzo, Schwarber, and Russell, all 300 or higher. Chris Coughlin's at 286. So the team's kind of on fire offensively.
Right.
But Dino, the sickest player, 182.
Sorry, I don't have that. I can't play that either. So
yeah,
I can't play any music tonight. I feel totally handcuffed.
Fowler was kind of having a rough go of it, and then he hit the grand slam today, which was pretty fun to see. I mean, I wonder how many Grand Slams the Cubs hit, you know, in like the past few seasons.
Now they have two this week.
Now they have two in this week.
Yeah. One off a position player, but yeah, let's count it.
Dude, it stop counts. Cold showering my joy.
Right, right. And Kyle Schwarber's initial stint with the Cubs is over.
And I would say it was a success.
Yeah.
It was okay. I expected more.
Only one dinger.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, he went 8-for-22. He hit a triple, had that home run, drove in 6 runs. He was a factor in his at-bats. Two of his hits were like little dribblers down the left field line, or the third baseline, well, I should say.
Even the triple was, that was...
Oh, yeah, that was down the first
not
baseline.
Not that hard, hit that hard, but
right,
still counts.
Fleet of foot.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been like these American League games have been pretty fun, actually. In the past, I was like, oh, man, they have a stretch of interleague games. This is going to be tough to watch.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to talk about with these games before we move on to listener questions?
I don't think so from my end.
Okay. So I usually ask for questions from listeners on Facebook on Sunday mornings. You can also submit your questions through email anytime during the week through the free IVNV iOS or Android app. You can leave voicemail through the app. We're not going to be playing any on this week's episode because of the recording setup, but you can ask your questions that way, or you can share your thoughts and opinions on the Cubs, and we will throw them in at the end of the show. If you don't have an Android phone or an iPhone, you can also call our voicemail line, which is 309-517-0624. So this first question here comes from Kyle. He said, the Cubs are striking out roughly 9.5 times per game, the worst in the MLB. How big of a concern is this? Do we need to see more two strike swing adjustments? Rizzo is a prime example of this. He struck out 116 times last year, near the worst in the league, and is now on pace for only 86 this year. Would love to see more guys do this. Thoughts?
Is 116 one of the worst last year? That seems low to me.
Especially with how many... I don't have those stats in front of me, but especially considering the number of, you know, that strikeouts are up around baseball.
Well,
But he did. I mean, over the last couple of, especially early in his first year with the Cubs and with the Padres, it was pretty high.
Well, the worst last year was Howard at 190, so.
Let's just keep interrupting Andy.
Well, they were...
Wait, what? actually, yeah, let's see. Hold on, Andy, don't talk. Rizzo was 66th worst in the league at 160.
Okay, yeah, not bad then. Especially for a power hitter. Go ahead, Andy. Sorry.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, wait, I found one other thing. no, really, go ahead, Andy. After you have that drink.
I was just going to say, okay, I just wanted to see if you guys were doing a bit on me still. They were praising his two out. I mean, it's his two strike approach at the plate. I think it was a Pat that was pointing out how he chokes up on the bat a little bit and just makes his swing a little bit quicker to the ball, like a little bit more compact, a little bit less long with the two strike count. And they were just praising him, like a guy who hit, 32 homers last season is willing to do that, you know, and that shows what a team player he is.
Right. Well, and I mean, Rizzo's strikeout numbers have gone down, and some of it does have to do with approach, especially with two strikes. But look at the other things that he has improved, you know, as far as where he stands in the box and his eye, his ability to identify balls and strikes is like, appears to be like supernatural right now. So I think there's some other things, but I think as these young players, well, it's a lineup with a lot of young power hitters, big swingers, and when you have those two things, strikeouts are always going to be an issue.
Right.
And so I don't know. I think it's a bit of a concern, but I don't think Chris Bryant and Addison Russell and Jorge Soler, they're not going to figure out that strikeout issue this season. Right now they're striking out between 30 and 33% of the time. And that's really where Rizzo was when he came up with the Padres. And he's now down to 12%. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying we're going to see those guys get down to that level, but
12% K rate. That's really his K rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Right. So I don't think those players are ever going to get down to that. But let's keep in mind that these players, these rookies, these like 21 through 23-year-olds are seeing major league pitching for the very first time. And I think it's safe to say that they will get better
mm-hmm.
with strikeout in regards to strikeouts.
But I do think that, 9.5-10 a game is definitely too high. But
right. But you also have
falls,
a team.
For me, it falls into that category of, yeah, I'm not worried about it. Yet.
Right. When you have a team that's almost all rookies and a lot of power hitters, I mean, that's just what you're going to get. Sometimes they're going to score 17 runs and sometimes they're going to strike out 15 times. Sometimes maybe in the same game. Who knows? Okay, so the next one here comes from Adam in Knoxville, Tennessee. He says, so I have been looking at some advanced metrics to compare different Cubs players. I wanted to get your perspective. So here's my question. If you had to choose between Chris Bryant with an OPS plus of 145, a 1.9 WAR, and a BABIP of 411, or Anthony Rizzo with a 171 OPS plus, a 2.9 WAR, and a 316 BABIP, who would you say is taller? You got to go with Bryant, right? I mean, I'm no math wizard or anything, but the guy looks like he's got to be at least 6 foot.
Yeah, he's got the 36-inch inseam. I'm going with
him. Yeah, I bet his pant size is weird, too. I bet you guys are in the weird pant size.
He's probably like a 35, 36. Maybe even a 35, 37.
I think the first number is a little bit smaller. I bet it's 34.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, I would say so.
But, I would say he's definitely taller. But if you had to choose between the two, just based on those numbers he gave, the beautiful thing is we don't have to choose between the two of them.
Right, we have both. Yeah, thanks for that email, Adam. That really made me chuckle. I think I got that on my last day of work, and it put a smile on my face. This next one is from Mike. He says, first off, do you think that the original plan was to call up Baez for these American League games before his injury? Obviously, there are no complaints about Schwarber, but considering how well Baez was playing, it seemed to be the perfect scenario. And then he said, secondly, two of my favorite players from my alma mater, the University of Virginia, have been drafted by the Brewers and Pirates. How quickly do I have to start hating them once our season ends?
Well, I think the answer to the first question is pretty simple in that it's yes.
Right.
I think Baez was definitely the guy without the injury.
Agreed.
Yeah.
For the second question, I think that you can still cheer on individual players. I think it's totally normal to have players that you like from other teams, even division rivals. It doesn't mean you have to like the whole team or want the whole team to be successful. So I'd say don't give up liking those guys.
Yeah, to me, I think it's kind of similar to players that you liked when they were with the Cubs, and then they've gone on to play for different teams. Like for me, Samardzija. I can still like Samardzija, right? I can still like Samardzija, but I don't. And he obviously he went to Notre Dame, and so that's one of the reasons. If he would have gone to a different team and never would have played with the Cubs, I still would have liked Samardzija because. He was one of my favorite college football players. So I think you can stick with him, Mike.
Agreed.
John says, really enjoy the show. I live in Nanjing, China. I don't really know how to say that, but originally from Des Moines, Iowa. I can only listen to games on MLB.com. So my first question is, what's the problem with WBBM radio and the dead time between innings? Sometimes I lose connection during the dead time, so I've started listening to the opposing team's broadcasts.
Let me speak to that one. Sure. I have experienced that those exact same problems. And one thing I've noticed is, you know, as you're listening on the app, they're basically wiping out the local commercials from the WBBM broadcast. And I think that's a big source of the problem. Like, Pat will be talking to kind of wrap up the inning, and they'll just cut out to the internet commercials, basically. Or sometimes it'll just be dead air, or I will lose connection every once in a while, too.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of trouble with the app. Same thing this year. And so when I'll lose connection, I'll try to restart it. But in reality, later I'll figure out, oh, it was just dead air.
Yeah, sometimes that happens for me, especially if I'm joining the game mid-game, and I'll come in and I'll be like, why is it not playing? But it's because it's in between innings and they're playing those local commercials.
Right.
It is a very frustrating app to use when it does disconnect you, because it seems like it's impossible to get it going again. You get that playback failed thing, and then you have to I have to kill the app and restart it.
That has the same issues. It's frustrating because this is fifth or sixth season getting the audio app, because I have the TV too, but it's been really glitchy this year.
Sometimes if I click over to the opposing team's broadcast and then just click right back to the Cubs one, that works for me. But it's funny, sometimes I'll go 5 minutes, not realizing the game's not coming through my earbuds. So,
no.
I've just mowed a bunch of the lawn just to silence. where did the game go?
Yeah, that's happened to me too, driving. One thing too that, what was I going to say? Man, totally escaped me.
So then anyway, there's a second part to John's question.
Yeah. He said, is there a problem between Madden and Coughlin leftover from his Miami days? In the last Cleveland game, why would you pinch hit for him with Ross when Coughlin has been hitting over 300 the last month and Ross is sub 200? Then pinch hit the North, who, by the way, is Dino, not the North.
Yeah, don't you dare.
Let's get this straight.
Don't you dare, John.
Right. Hitting the North with Baxter.
Well, I have to imagine I don't remember the situation, but the Ross Coughlin thing had to have been a righty-lefty thing, don't you think?
Yeah, right. That's what I would guess.
And the same thing with Dino and Baxter.
Yeah.
So I would assume, I mean, in both of those instances, the pinch hitters were opposite-handed hitters compared to who they replaced, so...
But it does lead to the whole other side of the argument of a guy who's hitting well regardless of handedness of the pitcher.
Right.
Sometimes pitch hitting seems a bit baffling, but.
So it'd be interesting to see what their numbers are, their splits versus against lefties and righties are.
Or versus that individual pitcher or something like that.
Yeah, there's more factors that we probably don't know there.
Yeah. Benjamin says, when you discuss Schwarber's first home run, which, by the way, Coombdog called him Schwarber. I heard a couple times. That was a little much for me.
I don't mind that.
Schwarber.
So when you discuss Schwarber's first home run, can you also mention the pitch before he stared down the pitcher like a badass, called time, and took a couple of practice swings before jacking it over the fence?
You know what? I did. I took note of that. I was like, whoa, look at him calling time when the pitcher is taking a little extra time there, like a pro. I mean, that's like a boss, man. I mean, how cool and collected. Go ahead.
That whole at bat was incredible. Because he was down 0-2, right? And then he's battles back, and then that happens, and it's booyah.
It's really nice to see the Cubs have rookies like that, in their first week, that have the confidence to kind of own the game and to not come up and be kind of wide-eyed and unsure of their abilities and unsure of, what their role in the game and everything like that. I kind of like seeing that confidence in the Cubs rookies.
Isn't it just kind of nice for us too that they came up and were effective right away? Whereas I was thinking with this series, with Buxton for the Twins, like that guy's starting out, what, like 3 for 23 or something like that at, you know, at the beginning of his major league career. It's just kind of nice for fans that we haven't had to like wring our hands over, you know, are these guys busts? Like think about, you know, already when it, they come up and they are already effective.
Well, and especially considering they said Schwarber's going to get sent down after the weekend series with the Twins, get sent back down to Iowa. And it's hilarious because you knew that Schwarber was going to play well, and then there would be that, why are they sending him down? Look at how well he's been. Like, you didn't even have to worry about, like, oh, he's going to go, like, 2 for 25, and, you know, you just knew he was going to, like, press the issue and make people freak out.
Awesome. That's so fun.
Nick from Wisconsin says, how long will you be able to handle all the talking heads that will be blasting the Cubs for sending Schwarber down to Iowa before you lose your shit? So, yeah, this is...
The good news is I never watch any of them.
Right.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of...
I haven't heard any of it.
Well, but I don't think there will be a lot of, like, quote, talking heads, unquote, saying this kind of thing. I think there'll be a lot of like armchair managers on the message boards and, you know, comment sections saying stuff like this, but anybody in their right mind, I think, will understand what the Cubs are doing.
Right. It all comes down to defense and catching and what the Cubs want in the future from him. So, I mean, if you want to just look at, I think you could make the case that Schwarber should be on the team. I don't think that's a ridiculous argument to have.
But no, but I do think
long term it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I think that they're legitimately making a go of this. I think all of us had a little bit of a question about, like, is this just a ploy, this whole catcher thing? Are they really going to keep him there? And I think they're going for it. I mean, if they weren't going to keep him there, they would have, I think, moved him off, rather at least considering it now at this point. And they haven't done it yet. And I think his value at catcher with that bat is so huge.
Right.
And you're pretty solid at catcher right now. So I'm happy with it just in the fact that, like, man, if he's in the lineup as catcher, it's even more scary.
Right.
Don't you guys find it heartening, too, that doesn't it seem like the ideal situation for a highly touted prospect to come up and struggle? Mm-hmm. I mean, because, okay, you have these 5 games to do, you know, like show what you can do, you know? And so it's like this limited amount of time. You got to imagine, you know, a guy would naturally put a lot of pressure on himself to perform. I need to perform right now, show that I belong. But then again, I suppose like the knowing going back to Iowa thing could take a little bit of the pressure off, but still it seems like a scenario that would lend itself to a guy coming up and struggling, and he did it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Johnny says, give me 3 guys that will more than likely be on the trading block that you would like to see the Cubs pursue.
I'll just throw out there, this is not usually our area of expertise, other players from other teams.
Do we have one, Kurt? Let's be real.
At least not mine. Not mine. What'd you say?
I said, do we have one? Let's be real here. An area of expertise.
Oh, yeah. Quad City River Bandits.
Go on.
I really don't have, much here. That was my way of saying I got nothing.
Well, I mean, for me, I kind of look at Samardzija. He's not doing well with the White Sox right now. They will probably be sellers based on how their season's going. And I understand why this probably is not going to happen. I understand why a lot of Cubs fans would not want to see it happen. I also understand why a lot of White Sox fans wouldn't want to see it happen. But I think it would be great to see him come back to the Cubs and for them to get the same production from him that they did prior to his trade to the A's last year. I don't have much interest in the Cubs signing him after this season, but like I said, if they could get that production, he would be a really nice addition to the rotation.
Well, his value's certainly down.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe you could get him for something, but that definitely was not a name that popped to the surface for me. But
it popped to my surface.
Oh, of course.
What do you think, Andy?
Shucks. You know, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't really see them going after Ben Zobrist. I was going to bring him up, but I don't really see it happening. Jonathan Papelbon, maybe.
Right. Yeah. And Cole Hamels. I mean, there are yeah. players out there, but it seems like, you know, you look at Papelbon and Hamels, and like we talked about a couple episodes ago, you're going to have to try to deal with the Phillies. And I'm not real confident in, based on what their requests have been in the past for marginal players or not necessarily marginal players, but you know, like the Taiwan Walker request for Ben Revere and stuff like that. Like, I'm not real confident in their ability to get things done. The Cubs' ability to get things done with the Phillies. So I don't know. Did we tell him? I guess we did technically tell him three guys.
Yeah.
Christopher says, favorite baseball related Father's Day memory as a child or a father.
Well, I have to say, like, as a child, my dad was not a baseball guy, so I don't have much there. But just today, actually, we went to the Quad City River Bandits game, which is now an Astros affiliate. And after the game, my little 3-year-old got to run the bases, and then we got to go play catch in the outfield. So that's pretty high up there. It's fresh, but it's also it was a good one.
Yeah, you'll remember that.
Ooh, yeah, man. Same thing for me. Is my dad not that into baseball really at all? My grandpa was a Cardinals fan that actually watched baseball. So, and then my son kind of hasn't shown many signs of being that into baseball so far. So, he does say cheer and give me high fives when Anthony Rizzo does something good. He calls him Anthony Rizzo. In fact, I think he thinks every player on the Cubs' name is Anthony Rizzo. So he's 4, just as a touchstone for everybody. So I'm hoping that there are some good baseball-related Father's Day memories to come. My dad did play catch with me a lot when I was a kid and took me to Little League and stuff like that. So it's not like he didn't help foster a love of baseball at all, but he just wasn't much of a Major League Baseball fan.
Yeah. If you're talking like specific to Father's Day, that day, I honestly have nothing. I can't remember doing anything really baseball related with my kids or with my dad. So, I mean, I have a lot of baseball memories with both my kids and my dad, but I can't think of anything specific to that day. Jordan says, what did you think of the stare Kyle Hendricks gave Starlin Friday night? So I did not see that.
Well, I mean, he deserved a stare. But, you know, give
Starlin... He was just doing it on behalf of all Cubs fans.
But, you know, give Starlin credit. They called a meeting in the mound right after that with Bazio, and Starlin came in for the meeting. I guess that would have been pretty weird if he would have stayed at short. That's not the Cubs' way, too, but...
He just acted like he didn't notice there was a meeting going on. Oh, sorry, guys. I didn't get the memo.
I didn't see it.
Too busy looking at the left field wall. Jason from New Mexico says, when is the bus trip, the lake get-together, and how can we support the show? And then in parentheses it says promotion and Patreon references. Jason really stepping in and taking care of our housekeeping for us. Yeah, so the the bus trip is August 8th, and there are just a couple of tickets available, and you can go to ivmv.com/bus. We're leaving from the Quad Cities, going up to the Cubs-Giants game, and we are stopping at the DeKalb Oasis to pick some folks up, and we're also stopping at Aurora, I believe, to pick up some folks. So if you're not from the Quad Cities or Central Illinois or from more of the Chicagoland area or what us downstaters consider to be the Chicagoland area, and you would like to go on the bus trip, get a hold of me and we can work that out. The lake get together, I don't have the date in front of me. I think it's like August 22nd. It's 2 weeks after the bus trip. If you go to ivmb.com/lake, that'll give you all the details for that. But basically it's a weekend party that we throw at my place and we podcast, we watch the Cubs at Duffy's, we have bonfires and camp and do all sorts of fun stuff. So we're doing that meetup that I mentioned in Tulsa on Friday, and also I will be in Southern California, and we're going to do a meetup. It looks like it might be on Monday, July 20th, and I will share information of when that will be and where and everything. And then also I've been talking about a meetup in Denver, and that's on Friday, July 24th, and we're going to go to the Rockies Reds game. You guys tempted to come out for that?
No.
I wish I was, but no.
We're going to just, I guess Michael from Colorado said that like day of game, you can just get these like patio tickets. They're like $19 and then you get like a $10 voucher for food or drinks or whatever. So that's a pretty good deal. And we thought that might be the best thing to do with just to hang out. I mean, for a group of Cubs fans going to a Rockies Reds game, hanging out on a patio, be fun.
It's like minor league baseball prices right there.
I know. Yeah. So those are the events coming up here in the near future. Danny says, this might have been driven into the ground already as part of discussion, but at what point does the quote-unquote personal catcher become a huge liability? We've discussed Ross's pitch framing, his old man strength, and ability to toot bland multiple base runners in a game. But when you have him batting around 175, followed immediately by a career zero hitter, he's talking about John Lester, he said, you are basically giving up that inning to the batting gods and hope that the other seven spots can cover for it in the other two innings. Don't get me wrong, I love the guy, and it was one of my favorite nights to sit next to my Astros fan wife and gleefully watch as he threw out three base runners in a game right after she said, yeesh, he's batting what? Why is he in the lineup again? But my heart sinks a little each inning when it's Ross pitcher slated for batting. He goes on and draws a parallel, I guess, with the Oklahoma City Thunder, basketball, whatever. So he says, in the end, that is that how we have to chalk up Ross? He's the grizzled vet with intangibles.
Yeah, I've kind of ripped on him a little. But yeah, I guess the backup catcher is kind of an easy target to be ripped on. But as far as personal catcher goes, I think this was more of a like he's available and has a good rapport with Liv Lester. I don't think it was the only reason for them going after him. You know, he works under this front office's system of pitch framing and other valuable defensive metrics. And so I think he made sense more than just being that personal catcher. So, but yeah, the offense is hard to swallow, but you know, you guys have made me see the light slightly on the fact that it's hard to expect a lot of offensively from your backup catcher.
I think he's a better hitter than his 188 batting averages right now. He's a career 231 hitter. And you know, in 2010, 2011, I mean, 2009 through 11, he had pretty good seasons with the Braves. He hit 273, 289, 263 in those seasons. I don't think he'll get back to like those kind of numbers, partly because he doesn't get as regular playing time. Well, you know, never mind. Those are bad. He was a backup catcher those seasons too. But I don't think he'll get back to those heights, but I think he's a little bit low for him right now.
And he's had some tough luck lately. I think he hit a couple of like 400 foot outs in this last series in Minnesota. And then we got to hear Coombe Dog talk extensively about how in 95% of other parks, that's a home run.
You know, I don't mind that.
And it's probably true, but it's still, I don't know how many, it feels like he's saying that every 5 minutes.
It's his target field talking point.
Yeah, he liked to reference that experience in Minnesota. Not necessarily target field, but.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Kurt, he's the backup. I mean, I think just the catcher position in general is a position that is not there for the offensive production. And so you factor in, you know, you consider that your backup catcher is even going to be less productive than your starter. There's a reason they're not the starter offensively. So they go out there once every 5 days and you just kind of chalk it up. And honestly, if there's a lineup that could handle tossing away two slots in the lineup offensively, it's probably this lineup.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is something other teams face. Every team has backup catchers, and backup catchers historically don't produce well offensively. So it's going to even itself out over the course of a season too. Danny says also, on a scale from Max Scherzer creepy hair, heterochromia to Chris Bryant perfection, please rate the eyes of the starting Cubs players on their level of dreaminess. I don't know what heterochromia is.
Your eyes are different colors.
Oh, yeah, it's when your eyes are different colors.
Okay. Gotcha.
Hetero meaning different, chromia.
Meaning colors.
Let's be clear that there are no better eyes on the Cubs roster than Chris Bryant. I mean,
yeah.
One thing I think is weird is how black Jonathan Taves eyes are all the time. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
I've never noticed.
Darkness.
He has like huge pupils or something. I don't know. It's bizarre. Okay.
I have somebody I'm friends with on social media that their spouse has like crazy black eyes too. Like her entire eye is black, and it always freaks me out when I see like a picture on Instagram.
She has Taves eyes.
Jeremy from Mesa, he says, one of the many things I love about hockey is the creative designs the goaltenders have on their helmets. I would love to see that happen with catcher's masks. How would you guys feel about it?
My initial knee-jerk reaction is that sounds awesome, but then I feel like it would be distracting for the pitchers. So I think it's good for them to have a solid color.
Yeah, but don't you chalk that up to like, that falls into the sort of golf category. Like, really? Do you need absolute silence? Do you need you can't throw to a guy with a decorative mask on.
Like, as long as it doesn't look like a catcher's mitt.
Oh, so you want David Ross to have little cubby ears coming out of his, like, little,
yeah,
fuzzy, yeah, cubby ears?
He should just wear the full Clark the Cub mascot head right there. see how his pitch framing is then.
And Jake Arrieta, 99, well, I mean, I guess, you know, since he's John Lester's personal catcher, we don't see him catch Jake Arrieta. But,
I kind of looked into this because I seem to remember some catchers having slightly personalized helmets. Yeah, and John Buck has several. I'm not sure who he's catching for now, but he was catching for the Marlins, and he had somewhere there was like a Marlin painted on the side of his helmet and stuff.
Kabuki mask.
Yeah. So I don't know. It wouldn't bother me.
I'm for it.
And then I think you can go ahead and just leave out the rest of what Jeremy says here. I don't think you need to read that part.
Well, I think I do. Most importantly, Jeremy says, also as a Patreon supporter, I believe I'm afforded to some control over the show. Mm-hmm. I would like to implement this clause in my contract to demand the small sample size song be played at least once every episode.
Oh, man, that makes my bile ducts quiver. I might have to go lose my dinner.
But for, like I said earlier, lucky for you guys, because I'm using my stripped-down setup, I cannot play any songs. So, At least you have these episodes where I'm on the road.
The strip down setup mean you're not wearing any pants right now?
No.
Okay.
No. Right. Let's see. Jason from Rock Island. He says, unless something goes nuts in the next month, we should be buyers. Positions we may target, players we may target, and who is trade bait?
Shortstops.
Shortstops, corner outfielders. We need at least one more catcher on the roster.
Yeah. Agreed.
But, you know, I don't know. They have a couple more options becoming available in the bullpen, so I would have said pitching, but maybe not. But, I mean, we still have a little bit of time here to see how the, you know, say, Neil Ramirez, maybe Rafael Soriano, how they do before they look elsewhere for pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could always strengthen pitching, you know, both starters and relief. I think, like, we could see them go after bench depth, depending on the injuries. And
yeah, that's a good point.
We know one position that there is some weakness in, as far as backups go, would be first base. There isn't a real
basically like backup. Mike Baxter.
Yeah, well, right. But when again, a lot of this depends on injury too. But when Olt comes back, he could put right. first.
Yeah.
Same with Bolton.
Somebody's got to back up Anthony.
Yeah, somebody.
Anthony Riz.
Jeremy from Mesa has another one here. He says, am I the only one that thinks the Cubs are missing out on some great jersey sales by not giving Rafael Soriano number 12? I mean, they probably have some old Soriano jerseys in a storage closet somewhere. But there's a lot of Cubs fans that bought Soriano jerseys that would be thrilled to be able to wear a relevant jersey again.
I don't know. That's to say that it's going to be relevant is a strong statement, but
okay, current.
Yeah. Still, I feel like that would be a little bit of a dishonorable gesture toward Soriano's memory. I don't know. That's all I got.
Yeah. I think that would just, that's too easy. I think like it would be too, I don't know, too easy to give everyone fodder if they actually gave Soriano number 12. Plus Schorber looks really nice in a number 12.
Yeah. Sure. Yep.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody for sending in those questions. If you shop on Amazon, they give us a percentage of your purchase. If you go to ivmv.com and click on the Amazon link on the side of the page and your shopping experience is the same, doesn't cost you anything extra, and it helps us pay the podcast bills. So, Kurt, speaking of Kyle Schwarber, you have a scary stat of the week for us?
I do, and we've kind of touched on this earlier, but I'm just going to repeat it again. And so this week's scary stat is really Schwarber's all-around numbers, in his 22 at-bats this last week, he had 8 hits for a .364 average. He scored 6 runs, hit a home run, a triple, and had 6 RBI. His OBP was .391. And so I think that's pretty solid for a little short stint in the majors before you go back to AAA. And I think it's definitely beyond what we expected. I think we all expected him to have impact, but that was definitely impressive.
Heck yeah.
Yep. It's good to have scary. It's good to have good scary stats.
Can't wait to see him back with the
team. And I definitely like, it was like, he's one of those, I think you can, that falls, and there's a lot of guys on this team that fall into this category of like just really fun at bats to watch.
Right. Yeah. You're right, Andy. It will be fun to see him up for good.
Heck yeah.
Internet muscle flexes. If you're new to our show, what we do is we go through Cubs.com articles. We go look on the Cubs social media, Facebook, Instagram, things like that, and find instances of commenters flexing their internet muscles on other commenters, on the subject of the post, the picture, whatever, or really just anybody else. So do you guys have any this week?
I do have a couple. They, I guess I should say one. They go together.
I'm not sure yet. I'm looking for it.
Go ahead, Andy.
Okay. Mine comes from Cubs Facebook. There's a post that talks about how they're going to name the left field little patio they have there in front of the rest of the bleacher seats the Ornitos Hacienda. Hacienda. And I, you know, okay, first of all, let me state that I don't like that, but I don't, but still, like, I know its purpose and what it serves in the grand scheme of things. And also, don't you guys think the ballpark looks pretty awesome right now? I mean, have you seen it lately?
I can't wait to see it in person.
I know, right? Okay, so anyway, on that post, you can imagine the muscle flexes on this, but there's a guy named Dan that's doing battle on the part of true Cubs fans everywhere. So I'm going to give you three kind of knee-jerk reactions to the Ornitos Hacienda, and then Dan the Champ's responses to all of these. Okay, first one, ugh, goodbye, my sweet Wrigley. And then Dan responds, it was in terrible disrepair. You're not Cub fans, you're Wrigley fans. And then later, another commenter says, the Rickets should be happy with being pimps. Anything for a dollar, no act will be refused. And then Dan comes in. We are the absolute last team to upgrade our old stadium, and the owner is bad. Stop complaining. And then once again, one guy says, way to sell out, Cubbies. And then Dan goes, it's called progress. Welcome to 2015. And then the same guy goes, if a cannibal used a knife and fork, would you call that progress too? And then Dan, poor Dan's response to that, okay, that is a ridiculous comparison. So you want them to play in a dark, crappy, unsafe park forever? You worry about the park. The rest of us will enjoy the winning. So shout out to Dan for doing battle on behalf of level-headed fans everywhere.
Oh, that's good.
I did find mine.
All right, go ahead.
So this is on Cubs Instagram. They posted a video of when Rizzo was going to catch the foul ball and missed it, and he grabbed the kid's bag of peanuts, which was hilarious, by the way, if you haven't seen that video. But then this person named Tiffany says, I would give him mine. And then the person after says, peanuts? So just
if you peanuts.
There's a lot of
nuts
and sexual references there are 400 comments on that little short video clip.
Man. What percentage would you reckon are sexual innuendo?
I would say almost 50% female, which is odd. Nut references.
Beautiful
women wanting to eat some peanuts.
All right, so mine came off of, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but it was like an article on Cubs.com about Starlin Castro. Do you guys have Cubs.com pulled up? What's the headline?
I don't have it pulled up.
I have got it.
It's,
one about his son.
Right, so Starlin Castro shares love of game with his son, and then there's like a picture of him. And so one commenter says, hopefully his son won't grow up to be the embarrassment to the city of Chicago and his Cub teammates that his father is.
Jeez.
Well, yeah, and then he kind of goes on, why Rizzo didn't pull him after that play tonight is something I will never understand, and I think Addison Russell will make a much, much better shortstop and has a higher upside than the incumbent bum.
What?
But I just thought it was funny that, like, you know, hopefully his son doesn't grow up to be the embarrassment to the city of Chicago.
Yeah, man.
Born and raised.
Multiple two-time All-Star. And did he say Rizzo pull him?
Did I say Rizzo? No, yeah. It's Madden. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I said Rizzo. Rizzo should have stepped in and taken charge. I have another one, though. Yeah, here's another one. Bravo, Castro's efforts to be a good father. Unfortunately, as his efforts cannot be, efforts to make man, I don't know what this person, how they're wording it. Unfortunately, as his efforts to make cannot be good shortstop. I'm going to read this as written. Let me try this again. Bravo Castro's efforts to be a good father. Unfortunately, as efforts to make cannot be good shortstop. Time to send him to double or to triple A. I totally butchered that, but I think maybe I can earn a pass considering how it was written.
Oh, man. He can't even father correctly.
Bravo his efforts. Oh, man. I'd say as soon as I saw like the headline on Twitter that Kerry Muscat tweeted, you know, Sterling shares love of game with son, I was like, oh, internet muzzle flags. It could not be a worse time.
You can tell from the title when it's going to be muscle flex.
Right. Certainly. I remember somebody also took issue. In the picture, Castro's son is wearing a bib that says, I love mommy, and somebody took issue with that.
What, Scott?
Yeah.
Oh man,
I'm just pleased that it's like a picture of Starlin Castro that appears to be a selfie. I don't believe it is, and he's not doing anything weird with his hands. So let's call that a victory. So this week's episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon contributors. Special thanks to our Hall of Fame level contributors: Jeremy, Dave, Dizzle, David, Jeremy, Dallas, Charles, Steven, Stewart, Guy, Peter, Jane, Shane, Michael, John, Craig, Rick, Luke, and Tony. Our associate producer level supporters are Matthew Macer, Anthony Hutfuls, Joshua Hansen, Ryan Shores, Brian Hunt, Tim Marr, Jason in New Mexico, and the Quad City Zone, Jason Nunn. This Wednesday, I will be posting an interview episode. I had the opportunity to talk with a couple of South Bend Cubs All-Stars, Jeremy Knoll and Cale Brockmeyer, here a couple days ago. So our upcoming midweek episode will be those two player interviews. We won't have the regular episode with Andy and myself. The Cubs host the Dodgers this week for a four-game series, and then they head to St. Louis for a weekend series with the Cardinals. We'll be back next Sunday evening to talk about all of these games. Thank you for listening, and until next Sunday night, go Cubs!